asking you a basic opening question, Rabbi?
Sure. Absolutely. That's what we're doing.
So you've been a teacher of mine, obviously, for quite a few years now. You've written prolifically on Judaism, Jewish observance, Jewish spirituality. And I want to ask a couple of basic questions to distinguish Jewish meditation from your perspective as a Hasidic rabbi and a spiritual teacher. There's so much discussion and there's been so much conversation here today about somatic practices, embodiment, mindfulness, breath, dance, the gamut, right? The gamut of that which goes beyond the conscious egoic mind or the left brain and analytical thinking to access, right? Like more expanded dimensions of consciousness and awareness and vitality itself. So really what I want to ask you is Jewish meditation, right? Like, is that what is that? Because I think a lot of us, like, we identify as Jews, like almost like a tribal affiliation or like a family or like a history. But is there actually something, what distinguishes Jewish meditation beyond the fact that we're Jewish practicing or pursuing practices of mindfulness and meditation that are in fact universal? Is that just that it's like kosher meditation, like there's different ways of doing it and there are ones that are kosher or acceptable according to the Torah and others that are problematic? Or is there something more essentially Jewish about the practice itself? So this is kind of what I want to ask you as a rabbi, as what how would you distinguish Jewish meditation?
This is a profound question, and the truth is a simple question, but a very profound one and has far-reaching implications. But I would say, to make it like simple, is that there is the yesh. I'll give three words for this. There are actually two, but they mean three different things. One is called yesh, which means existence, the immediacy of existence. Existence, the empirical world that we're living in, the world that we're sensing with our senses, which is the one form of experiencing life. This is called a yesh, the fullness of existence. And then a lot of meditation, a lot of practices, a lot of spiritual practices, all universal spiritual practices, essentially is trying to get to a place which is called ayin. Ayin is the emptiness or the nothingness or the transcendence or the infinite. There's many different words for this description of this idea. Which is a way to expand our consciousness, our sense of awareness, our sense of being in this world that enlarges us to something that's transcendent of the immediacy of existence. So to have something like a transcendental experience, some type of inner quietness, so beyond the rush of the noise of life, the sounds of life, to go into a quieter place, a deeper place within the self, to experience not the experiences of life, which is the fullness of life, but the experiencer of life. So the objective observer. And there's many different ways how to get into that place, but you're trying to get to a place of a sort of a type of escape, but not necessarily escape for a permanent purpose, but sort of like a type of escape from this world or from the experiences that you're feeling, whether it's hurt or pain or anger, whatever the feelings that you're feeling and is that it's you're having trouble with, or for that matter, lack of focus and mindlessness and disembodiment, whatever that is, you're trying to get some type of level of transcendence that will give you a certain perspective or a certain way of being in this world that will allow you to be differently. That's ayin. And the truth is that in Jewish spiritual practices, in Torah-based practices, the ultimate is not the ayin, the ultimate is the yesh amiti. The yesh amiti is the ultimate, which is the perfect existence, the fullness of existence. So to say it a little bit differently, there's the world of the duality, which is the place where we're experiencing life. In the immediacy of the experience, this is a place of the non-duality, which is the transcendence of life. But ultimately, Hashem, the creator, the giver of the Torah, is the we can't describe it, but it's a paradoxical idea, which is both being and non-being, or dual and non-dual. We can call this radical non-dualism, which is that the experience of connecting to Hashem, connecting to something that's higher, is not to transcend existence, but to be both above and below simultaneously, to experience the Yesh Amiti, the ultimate existence, which is Hashem, the creator, God, Ein Sof, whatever word you want to use, is the creator of spirituality as much as the creator of physicality. Spirituality is another form of creation. There's the creation of the physical world, which is my tangible body, my physical body, empirical life. And then there's the spiritual realm, an inner world, which that too is part of the creation. Hashem is the creator of spirituality and physicality. Hashem is the ultimate existence that includes both non-existence and existence, duality and non-duality, spirituality and physicality. And the objective of Jewish meditation or Jewish practice is always to get to that place, to be connected to that place. The truth is that we are always connected to that place. It's just about revealing our connection to that central space, which is called the Yesh Amiti, or Da'anoichi Hashem Elokecha, the I, the ultimate I that was revealed at Sinai. So a practice that is connected to the essence of the Creator, the essence of Hashem, has to be something that is experienced both in the duality and in non-duality, and therefore it has to be experienced both in the sense of transcendence and in the sense of immediacy. And that's why Jewish practice is very important. Mitzvahs, the actual physical practice of mitzvahs. You could have a spiritual experience, which is nice, or you can have a physical experience. But the ultimate idea is to have a spiritual experience in the physicality. So when you're a person actually puts on tefillin, keeps Shabbos, keeps kosher, does an actual physical mitzvah, and says Hashem Kedushanu, who commanded us, gives us this opportunity, this invitation, to connect to the essence of Hashem, we are having both a spiritual and physical experience. And we have to make sure both parts of ourselves are engaged that way. So we have to have our mindset, which is our kavanah, our intention, which helps when a person has some type of inner life that can activate that part of our intention. And also the embodiment of that is the actual physical practice. So talking about a Jewish practice has to be something that is intricately connected with Torah mitzvahs, intricately connected with actual spiritual mitzvahs, actual doing of the commandments. When we talk about a Jewish spiritual practice that doesn't lead us to that place and makes us disconnected or feeling ourselves spiritual, in a way that we don't need the physical actions to say, okay, so if I'm being connected through putting a tefillin, keeping Shabbos with the essence of Hashem, so maybe I can do this meditatively. Maybe I can just do this inwardly. And if you do that, you're missing you're connecting to the I, but you're not connected to the Yesh Amiti, the ultimate. So it always has to be translated and experienced. That's why a lot of Jewish spiritual practices, most of the Jewish spiritual practices, are always done within a context of a mitzvah, whether it was a kavanah for a particular mitzvah, or even if it was done like a certain meditative practice, like, for example, hizbananus, or any type of spiritual practice. They were always done either as an introduction to prayer or within the process of prayer, or as a way of learning Torah in a very deep way. So you were taking actually text and getting different spiritual experiences, like the way the Beis Yosef, Shlomo Molcha, and some of the other big tzaddikim from the 1500s are doing, or Yichudim, which you're doing unifications through a certain particular practice of mitzvahs, like the Ari, or the Hizbananus, which is more Chabad version of meditation, or Hizbadadus, which is a Preslin version, which is all practices that are always connected and intricately connected with Maisa mitzvahs, with actual practice, physical mitzvahs.
Oof. That's pretty deep.
You can ask a question about it.
Well, I just want to try to say my own summary of what you said, just to kind of make it distinct. Basically, you're saying so much of meditation and spiritual practices are designed to kind of remove you or take you out of the physicality, the most immediate physical egoic experience of your body and of life. And what you're saying is that in Judaism and the Torah's belief is that spirituality and physicality both are both creations, and that divinity is discovered or made contact with specifically in the both. So that's why we have these physical activities, right, as mitzvahs to do, which are very, very visceral and very temporal and very in the physical reality.
Right.
But the idea is for us to then have a meditative practice, cultivate some higher consciousness or expansion of awareness on the ground, so to speak, in the playground of a physical, of the observance of a physical mitzvah. And somehow the intention is to somehow come to the create a context in which everything comes together.
Correct. Correct. So there is a lot of ways that spiritual practices in general are embodied. Like you can embody a spiritual practice. Let's say you're doing a breathing technique or something, that you're doing that in the body. But I'm not only talking about in the body, I'm talking about in life, in the experiences of life, in the actual experiences of life, not something devoid of the experiences. It's supposed to make you more participating in life, not less. The barometer to know whether you're actually experiencing something that's really achdus Hashem, really connecting something to unity for you with Hashem, with the essence of Hashem, is if you're living as a mensch. Not only if you're living, you know, quietly and contemplatively and you're thinking proper thoughts, but if you walk down the street and you say hello to people. And you know, and if you're doing the actual practice of the mitzvah itself is seen as a means to do that. And if you're doing that and it's bringing you to more shmiras mitzvahs, it's doing you to a higher level of connection in actuality, in the physicality, then you know that the practice is not just a spiritual oasis that allows you to go to dip into a certain spiritual space that detaches you from the physical world, and therefore you're having this experience. But it has to be translated into life, into every aspect of life, not just embodied life, not only in terms of, you know, how you're feeling in your body and how you're sensing your body. But I'm talking about actually physical life, how you're dealing with your, you know, your children and how you're dealing with your parents.
Got it. So I guess my next question would be like the how, right? Because I think a lot of us, I know for myself, growing up actually in Orthodox Judaism and all that, but even like these are conversations I've had with clients and with other people, like so many of us can experience mitzvahs, right? And the tangible concrete actions of them as burdensome, as heavy, as have to's, as almost like as constricting, versus meditative practices and practice of spirituality that are expanding. And you're talking about a scenario in which a person engages with making Kiddush on Friday night or eating matzah on Pesach or any physical mitzvah that's embedded in the life cycle and in the cycle of the day of Torah, in this way that it catalyzes this expansion. So what's the how? How do we ride the physical actions of mitzvahs with this transcendence, and how do we marry them? How does that work? What are the steps involved in that?
So, you know, I would say that some of the you know, part of the step is to have a spiritual practice that, you know, when you're stuck in the experiences, you get stuck and you see them as experiences, they seem very limiting. They feel very constricting, very confining. Any experience that you have in life, any type of responsibility, whether you're a child or a parent or a brother or a sister, there's a certain type of confinement to that reality. I'm a son of so-and-so, and therefore I have to treat my parents a certain way, or I'm a parent of so-and-so, and therefore I have to be a parent. There's a certain type of way of being in this world that feels itself constricting, because the world is a constricted place from its lower level of consciousness. And one of the ways to cultivate a expansive consciousness is to have an inner practice, whether it's through prayer, whether through davening, or through learning Torah, or through Hizbonos. Doesn't matter. That to cultivate a spiritual practice allows you to experience something that's more, that untethers you from this constricting way of being. But that is just exchanging one reality for another reality, or exchanging one creation for another creation. So instead of being confined to the limited practice of in physicality, so now you're undefined and untethered to the spiritual life. But that in itself is a type of addiction, or type of, I don't want to say addiction, but it's a type of attachment to another way. And they're both just another attachments. So it's you're attached to physicality or you're attached to spirituality. And a lot of people trade that. It's almost like a it's a commodity. It's like, you know, if it's not working out physically, my life is not working out physically, so then I can go to my inner life and that could be working out very beautifully, and thus I'll ignore my physical life because in my inner life I'm perfect, I'm whole, I'm healed. And that's true. So I think it's a step towards the right direction. So just having a spiritual practice is a step in the right direction. And then once we get to that place, we have to think about this in terms of like actual life, you know, just talk about, forget about mitzvahs, which is the means, a love expression, really, essentially, of Hashem is giving us an opportunity, an invitation to connect with the transcendence and the ultimate. Think about this in terms of a relationship between two people, you know, let's say a husband and wife, are in a relationship. It's much more romantic to speak about, you know, to speak poetry to each other and to light candles and dance and, you know, be in this very spiritual place. It's much less romantic and it seems much more constricting when your spouse tells you, please take out the garbage. But what is the bigger act of love? I'm not so sure. You know, a person comes home and brings a lot of flowers to his wife and doesn't take out the garbage. I you know, you can ask your spouse what they would rather prefer, you know, taking out the garbage or whatever that job that you have in the house, or bringing flowers. Bringing flowers seems like a much more expansive, you know, thoughtful and feeling and emotional type of experience. But really, life is lived in the details. Life is, you know, all relationships is based on really caring for the other person in the details and the small stuff. In the things that were constricted. And when a person takes out the garbage and singing and dancing, because they're taking out the garbage, and this is obviously a metaphor, when a person is taking out the garbage and doing that for the beloved, it's not taking out the garbage anymore. It's about a connection. It's like, this is an opportunity that you're asked to do something and you can be connected. And I think we have to change our mindset of what a mitzvah is. A mitzvah is an opportunity to connect to something that's infinite. We're connected to our infinite beloved who gives us strings and passageways and means to connect with the Ein Sof, to connect with Hashem alone. And these are love acts. So you can choose to see it as a type of restriction, or you can be like the Baditchever, like, you know, talk about Pesach, where he didn't put on tefillin, the holy Baditchever, after, you know, 7-8 days, not putting on tefillin. He was up the whole night waiting to put on tefillin, you know, waiting for that opportunity to strap himself, which is the idea of like limitations and constricting yourself. But to him, that was the greatest love act, and he was waiting to do that act. And this is really what Jewish spirituality is, that we come to life from an expansive, open space where everything that we're experiencing is alive and connection, and every single thing is in dialogue with God, and every single moment and every single person and every single experience that we're having is really an opportunity and an invitation to connect to something that's higher and transcendent and simultaneously immediate and very present. And that's the way we're supposed to live our life. The mitzvahs are train us to be in this world in a way that is real and holy. And I don't want to say, I'm going to tell you a funny story, but I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'll just tell you the story anyways, because it's coming to mind. I remember I was going with somebody. This goes back many years, maybe 20 years ago. I was going with a person who ends up today being like a very famous rabbi and spiritual teacher. And we were schlepping from New York to somewhere in the middle of Mid-America. I'm not going to say the place because people may figure out where this place is. So, and it was like a big convention, and it was like a spiritual convention, and people were gathered. And it took a long time to get there. You have to go through three planes, and we're schlepping and coming, and there's luggage. We came at 2 o'clock in the morning. We arrive at the place. And the receptionist, the person that receives us, turns to this other person that I'm with and says, you know, being that this is a very spiritual space and we're going to be very open, I want to be very open with you. I completely dislike you. I think you're a fraud, and starts like this dismissing this guy. And this guy just traveled 30 hours to get to this place. And this person was thinking they were spiritual because they were being honest and open. And this is what happens when you have a spirituality that's not wedged in a very deep spiritual tradition of actuality, of what Lashon Hara is, and what is to treat a human being in ethics and actual Maisa Mitzvahs. There's a Torah that gives us a guideline what it means to live in this world and how it means to live in this world. And being open is a beautiful thing. It just, that was such in such a wrong context. And I don't blame the person that said it, because they're really feeling that they were, you know, they had this pent up anger towards the other person. I'm not even sure why, but they felt like in the name of freedom and the name of openness and expansiveness, they should really just express what they're saying. And I think that's what happens when a person can, an extreme example of when a person is very spiritual and unrelated to the physical, or a person brings a lot of flowers to his wife, but is a miserable husband.
So just to summarize what I heard you say, essentially, the question was the how, and basically what you're saying is the mitzvahs are really, they're opportunities for like almost like a trance, they're all, like, or a romantic like expression to God, to the universe, like, and so that's like a whole different, like you were saying about taking out the garbage, like when the context is that I'm doing this in service to my wife, who I love, then it becomes an act of love, and it becomes this experience and this expression of something that's so much more expansive. And you're saying that's really the opportunity. So like every mitzvah then becomes this experience for tremendous expansiveness, like the literal observance of it, the literal action of it.
Correct. Like in any relationship, like where does it really, where does it show that the relationship is real? Where does realness show up in this world? Like it shows up in the yesh of existence, and yes, and sometimes a person we get so stuck in the yeshes of existence that they lose their whole inner life and their contemplative life and their spiritual life, and it just becomes about just doing things. That's also not healthy. If you're in a relationship, use the same analogy, and you know you say, you know, I'm with my spouse, I'm with my wife for many years. And I do everything she asks me to do. I do X, Y, and Z, and I take out the garbage. I do everything. And the wife says, like, we have a miserable relationship. And the guy says, I don't understand why we have a miserable relationship. And the woman says, because we don't have a relationship. You're just doing everything that you have to be doing for me. But you never, we don't have a face-to-face relationship. You never looked me in the eyes. And you never said, you never even showed me how much you love me. You're doing all the right things, and you did everything. You provide for me. You're taking out the garbage, and you give me a lot. Whatever a husband has to provide for the wife, and wife for the husband, and everyone is in the relationship is doing exactly, you know, what has to be done. But if there's no punim upon him in the relationship, there's no face-to-face relationship, a real genuine encounter between two people that are really encountering each other, then the mitzvah itself, the action itself, becomes very burdensome, and it just becomes just an obligation. I'm just obligated because I'm in this relationship, and this is what I want to have to be doing. And then it feels tremendously stifling and tremendously constricting, because there is no love. The love, the relationship, has to be there. That has to be the foundation. And sometimes it works the other way around. Sometimes actually the doing in itself brings the relationship. But you always have to remember, you need both. It's not about the rut of the mitzvah, you know, the mitzvah and asr mulmada. You're just doing the mitzvah as the mitzvah because you're commanded, and this is what you have to be doing. You need that, the panim upon him relationship. Otherwise, it's like a marriage that both are doing the right things for each other, but they never actually had a real genuine encounter with each other. And then there's the flip side of that, which is sometimes people have tremendous genuine face-to-face encounters with each other, but they don't have a good marriage because no one does the right things for each other. And no one's doing the small things for each other. And that's like sort of a way of thinking about our relationship with the Creator, with Hashem.
So that's a real deep take on like on Jewish, like what's a uniquely Jewish like spirituality or a Jewish spiritual experience. How would you put into context a universal practice of meditation or mindfulness or breathing or somatic experiencing or embodiment or I mean at the gamut, right? Where would you put that within the context of, let's say, someone who wants to tap in to the Jewish tradition of a spiritual experience? So where would that kind of come in? Is that a preparation? Is that a needed tool for just well-being? Like, how does that?
So that's these are all things that you're saying is actually correct. It can be tools. It can be a general way of being, like for just a healthy way of getting out of things. But we have to understand that all these practices, like what you mentioned, let's say, you know, type of visualizations or somatic practices or dance or movement or breath work. All these type of things all are found within Jewish traditional sources, which means that they were practiced throughout the ages. There are many different sages throughout the ages, many different Kabbalists and scholars that practice these practices. I would say that the essential difference always is this always a conscious mindset that this is in relationship to something, to the Creator. It's not just about me feeling better, being better in this world, which is, of course, you know, derech eretz kodmo l'Torah. You can't start the whole process of Torah, of relationship, if you're not in a healthy space. The whole foundation of the Torah, of the spiritual relationship that we're having with the Creator, spiritual transcendence, spirituality, is predicated on the fact that you're healthy physically, emotionally, mentally. And then there's spiritually, there's like, you know, there's a hierarchy of worlds, so to speak, or inner worlds. That there's a world of Asi, which is the physicality, and the world of Yitzir, which is the emotional, and the world of Bria, which is the mental. And then on top of that comes Atzilus, which is the spiritual. And beyond that is Ak, which is the level that we were talking about, which is the unity between the Yesh and Ayim. But the way that a person could be in any type of relationship, thinking about a relationship even with two people. If you want to have a romantic relationship with another person or even a deeper relationship, let's say a mental relationship, you need to be secure on the lower levels of yourself to ensure that the relationship can actually work. You can't enter a spiritual relationship with God, so to speak, even though you are always in a relationship with God. But unconsciously, if you're physically hurt, you're physically in pain. This is what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, that if a person is physically, you know, sick, they can't, it's very hard for them to have a relationship because the foot is hurting and they're focusing on the foot. Same thing also certainly emotionally and mentally. If a person is not in an emotional correct state, you say a person should experience the love of God, but a person doesn't even know what love is. They never experienced love. You can't speak about love of God if you don't know what love is. You can't speak of awe of God if you don't know what awe is. What does it mean to live in awe? What does it mean to live in love? So, of course, in order to have a spiritual practice, a deeper spiritual practice, we have to develop ourselves and as much as possible to develop ourselves to have healthy emotions and correct and not scatterness of the brain and focus and mindfulness and ability to think through a thought. You know, all these things are essential in order for us to become spiritual people. To become on the level of Atzilus, or whatever measure that is, Atzilus even at the level of Asiya, to become that, we have to ensure that we're actually articulating the lower parts of ourselves in a healthy way. We can't even engage in a conversation. We can't even enter into a relationship if our physical body is hurting, and this is also if our emotional state is hurting, versus the stunted emotionally. I remember I was once speaking to a very serious person, and he was a mashpia, a magachir, like a very important spiritual person in his world. And he told me that he doesn't have awe. He doesn't have Yiras Hashem. He doesn't have awe of God. He can't experience awe. And I asked him, did he ever experience awe of anything? Was he ever overawed of anything? And he said, no. I said, of course. So how are you trying to experience this with God? How are you trying to experience with Hashem? I said, what you have to do is you have to go up to the mountaintop. Like, take a hike to the top of the mountain. And just sit there on top of the mountain. Look at the ocean. Just induce yourself to be in a state of awe. And then you'll be able to experience awe of God. And when you experience true awe of God, for example, then you experience awe in every moment. Then everything is in awe. Every single encounter, every single experience, every single person that you meet, you're in awe of them, of the infinite possibilities of the person. But you have to cultivate that emotion. Same thing with love and awe and all these emotions. So getting back to your question, for some people, these practices will help them to heal themselves on an emotional level. And then it's just as important to, if you break your leg, maybe you have to get a cast. Same thing also, if your emotions are broken, you have to make sure that they're fixed emotions. And whatever gets you there, so long as that it's a kosher practice and it's going to get you there, then sure, why not? Just like you take, for physical ailments, you need physical things. But then to also understand that if you need those practices, you should understand that these are also done within the context of Judaism, always. In the concept of Yiddishkeit, and the primary focus is always dveikus, always to get to the place where I'm connected to Hashem. So you're breathing with dveikus. So you're breathing and you're becoming very aware of your inhale and your exhale. And I wrote about this in the book called Breathing and Quieting the Mind. It's just about a simple practice of breathing, inhale, and exhale, and retention, and the focus before the inhale, before the exhale, But there's always an awareness that even though this is something I'm experiencing in the body, what I'm really experiencing is the divine life force that's animating, that's inhaling and exhaling through my body. So there's always a sense that I'm always trying to connect to something that's higher that will allow me to connect to everything that's lower simultaneously.
Raven, just to interrupt, because
Yes.
I think we should open it up to the floor for questions, just because there's not
Sure.
that much time left. I'll just share one that's been a question that's been shared with me privately. So there was a query, because you said about, you know, the difficulty of having a relationship with Hashem at the moment, where your body is not in a good, you know, if you're in pain or whatever. And the query was that, of course, you can find the perhaps the deepest connection. You know, I call out to Hashem when I'm in the darkness, whatever it is. But you can actually have the deepest level of connection to Hashem potentially, and have the awe when you're in the worst state of all.
Oh, that's clear, of course. What the Rambam is saying is that that for the body to be healthy, physical body to be healthy, is a way of serving Hashem, which means sometimes you're right. Sometimes absolutely. Sometimes a breakdown, a physical breakdown, some type of a breakdown in your life, allows you. Break to your yeshus, to break to your egoic attachment to a certain thing that allows you to experience something that's more. And most people do find a connection to Hashem precisely through tragedy, and unfortunately not through comedy. But that doesn't have to be that way. That's not doesn't have to be that way. That's because we're very attached to a certain way of being in this world, and a certain narrative and a certain story that we're telling ourselves. And when there's a violation of that story, that it breaks open ourselves and it allows us to experience something that's more. So that's true. But what I was talking about more is the idea that if a person is very much physical pain, like physically pain, now you could cry out, but sometimes people also shut down. And we're trying to have a relationship, just like with our spouse, but we're really trying to have a relationship, a healthy relationship, that I should feel good in my body, good in my emotions, good in my intellect, and good with the Creator. That's the ultimate way of being. The ultimate way of being is not broken self in a broken relationship with Hashem. It's a full self. Now, sometimes the brokenness opens us up, like the Kotzker Rebbe said, that there's nothing more complete than a broken heart. That's true. Sometimes we experience these things that allow us to break ourselves open to experience. But ultimately, Hashem wants to be experienced in the fullness of Himself, kaviyachol, as if, in the fullness with who we are. And the fullness we are is when our body is healed and our physical self is perfect, relatively perfect, and we're feeling good, and our mindset is clean, and our emotions are good. This is the way we should experience. It's just like any relationship, to think about it in the same way. And ultimately, it's the fullness of Hashem. We should be in our fullness of self experiencing the fullness of Hashem.
Thank you. I have a question myself, if
sure.
I may. It's just interesting to think that in a way you have to be the right place and maybe take a step back, and there are various practices you can do on your own, his bonus, whatever, to get you into that space. I'm quite interested, you know, when you look on the ground at a lot of communities, so you see people learning Torah, maybe they're learning full time, and maybe reflection is not everyone, obviously, but reflection is maybe absent. It's not reflective learning, it's very quick learning. The davening maybe rote for some people, not everyone, obviously. And mitzvahs, obviously, you know, can be done without kavanah, and at worst, chas v'sholom, you know, another b'shus a Torah. And do you actually think that where we are today, there's actually a lot more need to go out both to Frum Yudin and really everyone and say, well, actually, we do need to spend more time doing the practices which are out in the countryside or alone? And a question about what's the best way, if we have to take that out into the world more, how's the best way to do that? And maybe it's too denominational question, but, you know, are Chabad Shlichim, because I think, you know, there's that amazing resource. And if they were all really trained to speak the language of meditation, would Chabad Shlichim be the people who could, like, really transform this for, you know, the world of Yiddishkeit?
You know, I just want to say that Jews always complain about Judaism. This is from the beginning of time. From already this time of the Midbar, the Jews are always saying, whatever. So I get the impulse of Jews to always say, you know, Judaism today is like, you know, I think Jews always said that. So I think there's always, I don't want Hasrom to talk about negative about Klal Yisrael. And I think there's the Klal Yisrael is always perfect. So I would just say like this, could there be more? Yes, we can always do more. That's not a question. We can always, just like in our own life, forget about people on the outside. You know, there's a famous Hasidic story that's brought down both the Hasidic circles and the Bala Musa say Sal Salanta and Bashir Sasa, that he said there was a Hasidic Rebbe that said that when he was older, he said he wants to change the world. So when he got a little when he was younger, he said he wants to change the world. When he got a little older, he said, I don't want to change the world, I'll change my country. He got a little older, change my town. Get a little older, he said, I'll change my street, my house, my family. So when he got really old, he realized, I'm going to change myself. And if I change myself, I'm going to change my family, change my home, change the street, change the country, change the world. So I think always the question should be, what could we do as individuals? We have to take our chayas for ourselves. And if you're doing this, obviously, because you feel that it's like chayas, you're taking this responsibility. I think it's wonderful. I think every person that knows about and understands a little bit about the more deeper spiritual Jewish practices, the authentic spiritual Jewish practices, which you should say, it's very clear, we're talking about authentic Jewish practices, not practices that, because they're practiced by Jews and you add Shema Yisrael or Shema instead of some other mantra becomes Jewish. I'm talking about actually authentic Jewish practices that's brought down in the Svarim, brought down by practices that were done by Tzaddikim throughout the generations. If you're privy to this knowledge and you're experiencing it, I think you have an achrayus, an obligation to teach it. If a person knows Aleph, they have to teach Aleph. If a person knows Aleph and Beis, they have to teach Aleph and Beis. So I do think everyone has to take responsibility. And the world is moving towards that direction anyways. As we're entering into closer to the times of Mashiach, the Messianic time, the world will enter into a more inner world and a deeper world and a holier world and a more perfect world. So as we're entering into that world, there'll be what is happening will happen. And everyone should take that price, the obligation of their own life to make sure that they're ensuring the dissemination of the deeper teachings of the Torah to the largest possible mass.
Right. Thank you. So, I mean, we're kind of going over time, but if but there is one more question. In a world where a book titled No Self, No, sorry, in a world where a book titled No Self, No Problem is a bestseller, do you see that Ayin, non-duality, or Bittul B'Metzius as a first call to teach? Or do you think that we should specifically encourage devotion and relationship? So I think this is basically a question. Do you think we should be going in a big way and teaching about Bittul, or should it be more about sort of avoda and relationship to Hashem? In relationship to the world, and then it's just.
I don't see them exclusive. I think Bittul is not non-self. It's fullness of self. It's transparency of self. Bittul doesn't mean that I don't exist. When it talks about Moshe, Ve'ish Moshe, Anu Mekalad, when it speaks about Moshe being the humblest of person, it says Va'ish Moshe, and the man Moshe, it means not the Shmata Moshe, doormat Moshe, but the man Moshe was humble. Be humble doesn't mean I'm nothing. Be humble means that I am everything. Imani kan hakal kan, Hillel says, if I'm here, everyone's here. It's the recognition of the transparency of ego, not the nothingness of ego. So I think Bittul is doesn't mean that I'm nothing. It means that I'm Mandi, or the language of Zohar, Mandi Yuzei, or someone that's nothing is everything. It's not being attached to my very specific egoic experiences of life and recognizing that there is the ultimate I is expressed within all the eyes of the universe, and all the particular eyes. And that's the beauty of the world, that everyone has the particular expression of the ultimate I. And that's the avoda. The avoda is to be in a place of bittul, of ayin, of nothingness and emptiness, to serve and to be in connection to everything. So I don't think avoda and bittul are two separate things. I think it's one and the same.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Rav Pinson, Rav Rabin. It's been an honor. Thank you very much.